The following program is recorded live and may intend language not suitable for all audiences.
Trubisky being rushed, throws to the end zone for Deion Sims. He's got it for a touchdown.
Bears our life. Bears our life. One straight hour of Bears talk with Bears girl and that draft Dr. Phil guy. Monday through Friday, the bar room's got you covered. The NHL plays the tags, cause Fuller's got you smothered. Draft Dr. Phil, it's always hit sticks. Splitting double teams like 96 Akeem Hicks.
Our line
keeps growing, Mitchell keeps throwing. Dimes on time and in the window he's blowing. No denying that this show is a collaboration with a fan. Bears girl moderated, Dr. Phil is the man. Bears our life, Bears our life. One straight hour of Bears talk with Bears girl and that draft Dr. Phil guy. Bears our life, Bears our life.
It definitely hurts. Like I said last night, it stings. But we need to use this, and we need to go ahead and use this to get better. And if you have the negative, pessimistic approach to it, then that's all wrong. And we're not going to have that. We're not going to have it as coaches. We're not going to have it as players. We're going to learn from it. And that's my job as a head coach to make sure that they learn from it. And trust me, I'll be harder on myself more than anybody.
Bears fans, welcome to the 30th episode of this year's Bears Hour Live with Draft Dr. Phil. My name is Bears Girl, talking to you from Canada, where the pain of yesterday's Week 1 Chicago Bears loss to the hated Green Bay Packers is as hard to swallow for this Bears fan as it is for the millions of fans everywhere across the world. In our open, you heard a self-critical Matt Nagy as he addressed the media on Monday afternoon. Draft Dr. Phil will address us momentarily, but let me tell you that waiting in the wings to come on is Mark Schofield of InsideThePylon.com. This former attorney turned full-time football analyst will make his case for what happened Sunday night. But first, it's the doctor. And as you know, we always begin with what we call his opening rant.
Tonight, I start my thoughts and my perspective on life in this show. I am so self-admitted an addict to Bears football and football in general. I wouldn't even be the same person I am today without this great game, and I knew that a long, long time ago. Bears Hour Live isn't a phony show. In fact, tonight's guests will come on and truthfully break down this young quarterback for us, with a trusted and conscious eye on the prize. Tonight I speak from the heart, and I may have a tough time doing it tonight because of a lot of factors involving this great and truly amazing rivalry and what we witnessed tragically come to pass last night. It's with emotion that I challenge a rookie head coach on being prepared, being you, and being obsessed. The very foundation of your sermon is how every rep matters, every single one. And yet, they didn't matter when you decided you were going to sit your team, and you were going to let your young QB needing live reps because he admittedly didn't have enough of them in the new offense. We had a good week of practice versus the Broncos. We had 2,000 reps throughout the offseason. Yet in the biggest stage, with the final whistle rang, you got outplayed. You went to the podium talking about our guys didn't get a lot of reps this preseason. You contradicted yourself twice in football, and as a rookie head coach sending mixed signals to your team in the biggest game of your head coaching career, confusion ruled the day. Timeouts were misused and confused. Kevin White lining up wrong. A big lead was lost on the road versus your greatest rival. Fingers are being pointed all around. And this is one game. People will argue that point. They'll argue with me about it being one game. And I say, it's not one game. Losing is a disease. The head coach, he dropped the ball. Not just Kyle Fuller. Me as a coach, I always preached the difference between winning and losing is catching and dropping the football. Well, the coach dropped the ball. There's so many moments in that game that could have changed its ending outcome. Like Fuller's interception. Dropping Mack into coverage on 3rd and 12. Kwiatkowski on the field way too long. Not blitzing an injured, immobile quarterback. Alleviating confusion by manning up and challenging the defense. But in the confines of coaching malpractice, there is one football mortal sin you cannot make and you cannot commit. It's ingrained in me like compassion for all races. In the chaos of momentum, you never forget, never, ever forget who your best football player is. With simple situational football, you gotta remember. You gotta take the time. With the game on the line, despite everything that happened previously, the drama of Aaron coming back, the breakdowns in coverages, missed blocks, high snaps, timeouts, missed assignments. You, yes, you, as the head coach, have the ball in your possession, up 3, with 3rd and 1 to go, and with Green Bay having no timeouts. The previous 2 plays were a high bobbled snap that resulted in a loss of 3 and a spectacular run by Jordan Howard, your best offensive player. A player, mind you, who is averaging 5.5 yards a carry and only had 16 in the total game. Well, he rumbles for 12 yards, trucking tacklers along the way, getting up from the ground with a fire in him, with a dog that you look for in a playmaker that wants the ball. He's feeling it. He's asking for it. Coach, give it to me. You look at that video, a champion wanting the ball to close it out for the team. But on 3rd and 1, guess who's not on the field, guys? The Bears come out empty, just like the score at the end. They're in shotgun with 2:47 to go. Green Bay has 0 timeouts, and you possess the football. You motion Tariq Cohen back into the backfield to stand next to Mitchell Trubisky. And you run a gadget play to isolate Cohen versus an outside linebacker. To pass the ball on 3rd and 1? It's a sin. Not only did you take your best player out of the game, but you're also throwing the football. And with that, there's a 50% chance that that football will be incomplete, which stops your other enemy besides the team, the clock. You win close, ugly games by making controlled, situational football decisions that challenge your team mentally and physically to be their very best. Running the ball on 3rd down under center takes all the mystery, all the intrigue away from this game. It, in fact, was tweeted out by me and the smartest man in the barroom at the very same time that up 3 up three. You may want to run two times to control that clock and eventually the outcome of the game and send a message to your team and its best offensive player that not only do you believe in them, but you and every goddamn player in that locker room knows that you do. And you will win despite it all, or you will go down fighting. And up three, if they stop us twice, we don't deserve to win. This loss is on trying to be too smart and forgetting the simple rules of football. They can't score without stopping you. And you gave that game away. And that is my rant for Bears Hour Live.
Dog, that rant is your best one yet. And all of us in the chat room and listening live can feel your disappointment. But unlike the Bears, tonight with us is someone who will not disappoint. It's the return of Mark Schofield. And as promised, the Doc has a special song for his special guest.
Some positive, some talking points and remedies. I haven't got a clue what counsel will say. Hurry, Phil, Mark's speaking the truth. Gonna take some time to break down Mitchell Trubisky. That's what we have our attorney from the pylon to do. Don't miss
that was tremendous. I'm gonna make that my ringtone.
Yeah, you got your own song coming.
I mean, that's when you know you've made it. I mean, when you've got a song about you, you know you've made it. I mean, I'm an old school like Tony Kornheiser radio show fan, and when the Littles, the fans of his show, would have jingles that they would make for guests that would come on, that's when they knew they made it. Now I know I made it, so I am truly touched and honored.
Well, you should be, because I put a lot of work in. No.
Welcome to the club of having a song after you, Mark.
I am just blown away right now. I feel completely welcome in here, and it's great. It's great. I'm glad to be back, you know, with a song named, you know, for me. And let's face it. Look, as I said before we started recording, none of us are Lions fans, so we all have that going for ourselves right now. Take solace in that.
Yeah. Well, Mark, it was a tough night. I hope you can hear the passion in my rant.
I did. That was, I gotta say, it's rare that I get sort of motivated to then do a podcast. It's not like back when I was playing, when you would listen to music before the games, get yourself juiced up and ready to go. I got some chills. I could sense the emotion, the pain, the anguish, and the passion. So I'm ready to go. I got to live up to that now. So I got to bring my AA game.
I know you got a song.
The barflies in the chat room are wanting you to be absolutely 100% real with us tonight.
I will aim to deliver.
When you look at what happened and transpired, let's talk real quick about the positive, and you were on here. You got to move heaven and earth with your quote to get Khalil Mack. It was, and I haven't had even a chance to talk about this game. So with you, I'm blessed because we get the fanatical, radical man, the attorney, to break down Mitchell Trubisky's game. But first, heaven and earth was moved. Ryan Pace gave away two first-round picks, got a second and a fifth back for Khalil Mack. To me, I think the Bears clearly won the deal prior to watching this man take the field last night. Mark, what did you think of his initial performance as a Chicago Bear?
I mean, I think it sort of justifies the decision to move heaven and earth like they did, like you said they did, to go get him. And you can tell that he can be a game-changer type of performer on the defensive line, up front, getting after opposing quarterbacks, causing havoc. I mean, that Packers offense, you know, near the end of that first half, obviously you have the pick six situation there. You know, they were just floundering. And not every quarterback is going to be Aaron Rodgers, number one. And number two, you know, this is a sort of rare instance in which Roquan Smith is still being worked up to sort of game speed, and Khalil Mack missed the entire preseason, so he's still being worked up to game speed. And so you're not going to face an Aaron Rodgers every week. You're going to see him once more. You're not going to, you know, have a situation where these guys are going to be limited. They're not going to be under pitch count type situations with the number of plays they're going to get, because they're going to get sort of back to game speed. And so we can see in this defense the potential for this defense to be truly special. And that's something I tweeted during the game last night, because you can see the ways that they can attack quarterbacks. Roquan Smith gets onto the field for his first NFL sack snap, and he gets a sack on that play. This defensive front can be special. There were some breakdowns in the secondary, which I know where to get to. There might have been some curious decisions on how you played Rodgers near the end, which I know we're going to talk about. But we saw in that first half just how special this defense can be.
When you look at some of the things you brought up, let's start with Roquan Smith. Clearly, Khalil Mack not only said his worth, but he delivered. And, you know, sometimes when guys get paid, you kind of worry about how they're going to perform once they're paid. With that, with this man, obviously, there's no concern, but the rookie, for me, and I don't know how you felt about it, but I said it in my rant, you could see that Nick Kwiatkowski was struggling in the scheme of what he was being asked to do. And I really felt that at some point, just like in a basketball game where you want to start that senior kid and you put him out there and he's playing, but you just know that at some point in the first 8 minutes, you're going to have to pull this kid if he can't perform. And that's the way it looked like with Kwiatkowski. And you needed to put the kid Smith in. They didn't do it. However, when Trevathan got hurt, he comes in and he immediately gets a sack, a cleanup sack, to an amazing rush by Mack. And that was one of the most beautiful pass rush maneuvers I've seen since the great Lawrence Taylor. And I'm not even hyping that up. I have to put that rush on, even though he didn't finish. But that being said, your thoughts on Kwiatkowski and Roquan not getting in there?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you look at Kwiatkowski, look, he's right now, just right now, because of the time he's had with this organization, with this playbook, and in this defensive scheme and structure, you know, he's a more fundamentally sound linebacker right now. But that's going to change, obviously, when Roquan Smith gets more time, gets more reps, and things like that. So he might have that slight little advantage right now, but all great players have that sort of trump card, that one thing that they can hang them their hat on that makes them a much better option for a team, that makes them the elite, the great. And with Roquan Smith, it's that burst in athleticism, that ability to go sideline to sideline, that ability to make plays in space. You know, he had a, you know, play a little bit later where he flushed Rodgers, and it was just that quick closing ability where he was going to get there, you know, and other linebackers, other defenders weren't going to be able to close that gap. But he was able to close that gap and make Rodgers have to get rid of the football, or he was going to take a sack there. And it's that burst and athleticism and quickness that's Smith's trump card right now. And at some point, it's probably coming this, you know, as soon as next week, that's going to be the thing that gets him onto the field. Because forget the fundamentals, forget the assignments and things like that. He's got the athleticism to make plays from sideline to sideline. And even if he's a step late late with his read, a step late reading his keys. He's got the athleticism to make up the difference, and that's going to be the key for him.
And what's everyone was chirping about, including myself, his greatest asset might be his ability to be instinctive. So to your point, getting him out here and allowing him to be instinctive would not only help this football team, but it would, especially when you're getting another pocket breaker, if you will, in Russell Wilson that he's going to have to contend and defend. So I'm with you. I completely hear what you're saying. I hope that's the move. I mean, it should be, but
yeah, and
you never know.
You know, facing Russell Wilson, it's, you know, a similar animal in facing a mobile quarterback, while Rodgers and Wilson are mobile in different ways.
Right.
Rodgers,
right.
It's more with pocket movement, more like Brady. Wilson will run, and he is a threat to do that. You might need to spy him. You might need somebody to keep an eye on him. And who better to fit that role than Roquan Smith? I mean, that might be the thing that gets him onto the field for the majority of their defensive snaps next week more than anything else. Is if you're going to go with a spy on Russell Wilson, who's a better option than Smith?
Were you surprised staying on him that he didn't play more?
I was a little surprised. Again, you know, when you think about the things that he can do, when you think about the athleticism, you know, particularly, and we can sort of get into, if you want, the blitzing Rodgers or not blitzing him.
Yeah.
That would have been
bring it right in here.
You know, if you're going to attack him, you know, to have somebody that can close the gap quicker. Because, look, they did blitz him twice, and he went two for two for 126 yards on the TD to Cobb. So I get why there might be some saying, well, maybe we shouldn't blitz him that. If you're going to do it, have somebody that's going to get home. You know, and maybe Smith's the guy that can do that for you. Maybe Smith's the guy that's going to, if you send him, he's the guy that's going to get to Rodgers where other guys might not get there in time. And so I think if you were going to do that, you might have been smart to have Roquan Smith on the field to fill that role for you.
Well, to that play, because I want to talk about that Cobb play since you brought it up. I've watched it about six times. I still think either there's confusion, they're trying to run a zone dog blitz of some kind and have Jackson play the robber. You watch Khalil Mack, he absolutely destroys the right tackle, Bulaga, and he's about a step away from making a sack, and then he drops off and into coverage into the flat. Floyd's drop. I don't know if it was a mistake in the call, a confusion, but again, we've lived this with Green Bay versus Chicago, with the errors in the biggest critical moments of games. And what did you see on that play? I mean, see it. Mack is attacking up the field, Mark.
Yeah, and I'm not sure what he was tasked to do there. I don't know if he was freelancing there, because he pushes the right tackle basically almost into Rodgers' lap. And then he just drops underneath. And you've got Floyd basically covering somebody on a crossing route from left to right from the offensive perspective. It just opened up the entire middle of the field as well. There's like no safety deep. It just seems like not everybody was on the same page. And if you're going to have a moment like that, a breakdown like that, talk about the worst time to do it.
I
don't understand. It's from a schematic perspective, because then you're left with a three-man rush on Rodgers. And if you're going to go three-man rush and drop eight basically into coverage, you're going to have at least, you'd like to see at least one or two deep safeties in that situation. So when this happens, when Cobb breaks free, there's somebody back there. But it's like they were playing like a zero blitz with a three-man rush. It just didn't make sense to me schematically.
Yeah, I couldn't figure it out when it happened. My jaw dropped, but it is what it is. Once Jackson went for the interception and tried to go across and make a play, the kid was free, because he did look Amos, who was playing at least 20 yards off, over the top on Adams. He looked him over, and Adams had Prince Amukamara beaten again. So Amos went over the top, and to your exact recognizing, the whole middle of the field was open once the rookie Eddie Jackson, the second year player now, Eddie Jackson, tried to make that play. Oh, it was just everything that could possibly go wrong in this game in the second half. Because the first half of football, you saw everything you wanted. And I want to stay a little bit on the positive because obviously there's a lot of negative. Talk to me about Jordan Howard and how many touches he had and what you thought of that.
Well, I think he didn't have enough. And I think that's the first thing we should start with, because like you said, look, you know, what did he have, like 16 carries or something like that?
Yeah.
It wasn't enough. He needed at least one or two more in that game, you know, whether it's on third down and fourth down, or at least on that third and one situation at the end. You know, and sometimes we see situations, and, you know, when we see offensive coordinators become head coaches, but, you know, they retain the play calling duties, you know, we sometimes do see the influence of the guys that they learned from instilled in them. And we saw a little bit of Andy Reid in Matt Nagy last night, you know, and we saw him try to get too cute. We saw almost a reliance on the pass game when you didn't need to throw the football, taking the ball out of Jordan Howard's hands, who was having a great game, you know, who had ripped off a couple of runs on that last drive, but you end up settling for a field goal. It just seems like, look, sometimes you just have to avoid overthinking it. And I think everybody at Lambeau Field, everybody watching on that third and one, expected them to come out, you know, 12 personnel, maybe 13 personnel, you go completely jumbo and you run it in there. And if you get stopped and you've already made the decision that we're going to kick the field goal on fourth down, at least you get it down to the 2 minute warning. At least you bleed the clock, mm-hmm. takes time off the clock that Aaron Rodgers doesn't have a ton of time to work with. Maybe you do decide, like you said in your rant there, we're just going to go for it twice. We'll run the ball twice. And if you stop us twice and then you go down the field and take, you know, kick it, field goal to tie it or even take the lead, well, then fine, you beat us. But we didn't beat ourselves.
Exactly.
So the decision there to go for it and throw it on third and one, I thought was too cute. To their credit, though, I think they got the look they wanted. If you go back and look at that, you get Cohen isolated on, you know, a guy wearing number 93. You get Tariq Cohen isolated on a guy wearing a number in the 90s. Chances are he's going to be open, and he was. But Trubisky didn't pull the trigger there. I thought that was a throw he could have made. He didn't. He tried to check it down on that crossing route to Miller. Throws it through his hands, basically. You know, I think with that play call, if you just look at the execution of the play itself, I think they got what they wanted. Trubisky didn't take the risk, didn't throw it downfield, tries to check it down, and then they end up kicking. I think once you've made that decision, if that's the play you're going to run, you're going to run it and hit the throw that's designed to be made.
And you're bringing up Trubisky, and I want to transition to him, but before I do, did you look at Jordan Howard? You know, the narrative has been that he can't catch. Did you see what I saw in him showing you, oh, I can catch, and I could do everything here?
He looked much like a more complete back than I think people were expected. And what's interesting, I always feel like it's smart to keep an eye on sort of the fantasy football world, like fantasy football Twitter, what some of those people are saying, because a lot of people going into this season were saying, don't sleep on Howard being a full three down type back. Don't sleep on him being a weapon in the pass game. He had five catches last night on all five targets for, I think, 25 yards. I mean, he's not going to be a home run type hitter out of the backfield as a receiving threat. That's what you've got Cohen there for. But mm-hmm. you can keep him on the field on third downs. You can go two back packages. And they did some of it. I'd like to see more of that with both Howard and Cohen on the field, because that gets you into mismatch type situations. It's something the teams like New England do a ton with either White and Burkhead on the field at the same time, or when they get Sony Michel into the game, you're going to see two back packages with him. It forces the defense to decide, what do they want to do? Do they want to go base? Do they want to treat Cohen like a receiver and go nickel? When you get them to make that decision, then you can use tempo and sort of dictate the flow of the game to them. If they decide to go light with nickel, you can run the ball more. If they decide to go base, you can spread it out and go four or even five wide if you want to. So I want to see more two back packages from this offense. I think with both Howard and Cohen, those guys have shown they can be receivers out of the backfield. You can split one or both of them out wide as well.
And you bring that up, and to my point in my rant, you know, you are in the backyard. You do Locked On Patriots. You deal with arguably the best coach all time in the NFL, you can say. And I know Packer fans will get upset, and we can get into an argument, but the reality is what it is. When you look at Bill Belichick, put yourself in his shoes, Mark, for a second. It's 3rd and 1. Jordan Howard just totally ripped off a great run. Got you. You were at 2nd and 13. He gets you down to 1 yard. The momentum has been swinging. You need to put this game away because you're on the ropes. And you could feel it. Because if you let this guy come out and everyone's thinking and overthinking, tell me if I'm wrong in that Bill Belichick, oh, he's putting Cohen and Howard in the backfield to make you think, and the big boy's getting the football twice, and we're going to get this first down, even if it's a quarterback sneak. We're going to get it to continue this drive.
Yeah, I mean, look, you're talking about a coach that went for it on 4th and 2 deep in his own territory against the Colts on a game against Sunday night. I mean, this is a guy that, you know, is more willing than most coaches to, you know, go for it in those types of situations, but to still make smart decisions doing it. Now, on that 4th and 2 play, you put the ball in Tom Brady's hands. I mean, that's your guy. You're going to win or lose with him. But I think, you know, if Belichick were on the sidelines at Lambeau last night in the headset, he would have, you know, if he wasn't calling the plays, he would have told his offensive coordinator, look, run it twice. You know, we're going for it here. We're winning this game now because, you know, let's face it. You know, when they kick that field goal, you go scroll through the timeline in that moment. Pretty much every fan that wasn't wearing, you know, orange and black last night said the touchdown was coming. I mean, you just knew. You just knew that Rodgers was going to get it done somehow in that situation. And so when you're going up against a guy like that, yeah, you put him away best you can. And if that means going for it, you know, on 3rd and 4th down, then you do it. And even if you're worried about that, if you've convinced yourself that kicking the ball on 4th down, kicking the field goal, taking the 3, you know, getting into a 6-point lead is what you're going to do, then run it on 3rd down. Then at least take 45 seconds away from Aaron Rodgers.
Well, it's orange and blue because orange. I know the smartest man is going to be fired up if I don't correct you, because growing up as a kid, when ABC and the Bears were on Monday night, we used to talked about being kids and being so pissed off that the helmet on the TV screen looked black and orange like a Halloween jack-o'-lantern. And we're like, navy, it's navy blue and orange. But anyway, I got to get into the elephant, the black bandit, we'll call it, of what transpired last night, because I think this kid was seeing black. He started out, and that's Mitchell Trubisky, on the scripted play. I know a lot of people were saying it and tweeting it, and I believed it too. The kid looked sharp. He looked confident. He looked athletic. He was delivering the football. And then after that, those scripted plays went out, he all of a sudden looked like he, and I'm speaking on what I see on, you know, I haven't got the coach's tape yet, but I watched the cut up now, and I watched it last night live, and I just felt and saw a nervous quarterback just not trusting the play to develop at all. What did you see from the get-go and to now?
Well, I mean, he was fantastic on the scripted 10. I mean, he came out and was crisp. He went 4 for 4 in their opening drive. You know, he had that play on the throw to Gabriel off of play action on that first drive that was one of the better throws I've seen him make in the NFL, on time, in rhythm, perfect anticipation, ball coming out, you know, as Gabriel's getting into his break, which is exactly what you want to see. He saw the off coverage pre-snap. He knew the look was going to be there. Decisive read there. That throw to you know, Trey Burton later that drive, we had to set and reset on that 3rd and 2. You know, that's one of those throws you want to see quarterbacks being able to make when they've got to sort of reset their feet in response to pressure. On that next drive, he had a slot fade to Allen Robinson, which is a design I love for them. You know, that slot fade, it's sort of one of the newer concepts. You get that fade route with more space towards the sideline. Wentz ran it a ton last year. You know, great throw there, great catch by Robinson. Then that other throw, and I think it was a 3rd down to Robinson, where he just drilled it into that tight window. You know, he started great in this game, but when they got away from the scripted 10, when they got through the, you know, those series of plays, he started dropping his eyes. He started seeing ghosts in the pocket. You know, there were a lot of times when, you know, Green Bay showed pressure. There was one time when they, I think it was that fourth down when they went for it early in the game, when they showed two guys in the left B gap, they showed blitz pre-snap. They both dropped, and it was just a three-man rush, but he just dropped his eyes way too soon. Didn't even play a chance to develop. We saw that on, you know, their field goal drive at the end, where he was again dropping his eyes. Even when there was just a three-man rush, they were, you know, giving him the pocket, a clean pocket to throw from, but he was just skittish. You could tell that he wasn't trusting his mind. He wasn't trusting his arm. And, you know, what I saw in that moment, you know, I was having flashbacks to when I was playing and I didn't trust myself to make a throw. And I was just like, look, it's much safer for everybody if I just run it and don't risk making a throw here. And you almost saw that in Nagy when he called 18 power, which is something I ran when I was nine. And it's because he's like, look, we're just going to run 18 power.
Jordan Howard makes the big block.
Yeah. And we're going to get a first down that way. And so that tells you what the coach was seeing from the sideline as well. And so, you know, I just got done. I turned in my piece for Pro Football Weekly tomorrow, breaking down Trubisky's game. And that was the big concern I had coming out of it, was he's got to stop seeing ghosts in the pocket. He's got to stop dropping his eyes. You've got to give these chances, these plays a chance to develop. And he didn't do that a number of times last night. And that's really concerning right now.
Mark, I know it was a hot button issue, but it's relevant because last time we spoke, you knew what side of the fence I'm on. I'm on the old school side. And clearly, I think the attorney's going to have to give me my fees back, because the live reps to a kid who has struggling issues right now processing the playbook that Nagy tried to, you know, he double-talked. You caught him flip-flop twice and contradict himself, as I said in the opening rant. To me, watching what you called skittish last night was totally a drop ball by this staff and the decision to not have him in that dress rehearsal to say what you want. You were a quarterback, Mark. How much does confidence transition to the next game? And how much does your letdown of last game? You know, some people, some psyches, that's why it's a mental game, a lot more than people think, can't get past what they did last time. And they start worrying, like you tweeted, you pointed out, everyone felt the game was going to be over after that field goal. Rodgers was going to do it. This kid's mental psyche, how much are you worried about it? How much of the concern without getting those live reps now, looking back on it?
Yeah, and, you know, when I was here last and we were talking about it, you know, we all...
You did admit if it shows up, I'll give you that.
That's what I said. I said basically what's going to determine if it was the right move or not was how they come out on, you know, Sunday night. And it's clear that he got all the reps he needed when it came to the scripted 15 and the scripted 10, because those looked great. But he might have needed some reps on the rest of the playbook because, you know, once they got out of that, the offense kind of floundered a bit when it came to the passing game. He wasn't comfortable back there. And familiarity with the playbook, familiarity with the concepts you're going to be running, that breeds comfort level, that breeds confidence, that breeds success. I mean, it's so critical to have that as a quarterback, because when, you know, you get into situations where you're not familiar with what you're going to be asked to do, when you get into situations where you're not quite as familiar as you should be with the concepts you're running, you're not going to be familiar. And you're going to revert to muscle memory type moves and decisions, which for athletic quarterbacks like Trubisky, it's dropping your eyes, tucking the football, and looking for space to run. That can work in the ACC on Saturday afternoons against NC State. That might not work on Sunday night against the Green Bay Packers, because they're athletic too. They can chase you down. They can close those rush lanes you think are opening up before your eyes. And then you're not giving plays downfield that are schemed to be open for guys downfield a chance to come free, a chance to come open. And so it's a bad situation. And let's face it. Look, you know, part of the job of being an NFL head coach is handling the PR. And to his credit, as he did, you know, when he made the decision to not play those guys, he, you know, went up there and answered all the questions. And he did it again last night. And he said, look, you know, I didn't get these guys didn't get a lot of reps. Well, why not? You know, why not? That's the follow-up question there. And it seems like for at least your quarterback, who's the guy that you moved heaven and earth to get Khalil Mack for, to put around your quarterback that you now believe in, maybe he needed those reps.
Oh, maybe. I think definitely.
Yeah.
And I want to call out every hater to the show and ask you how you're feeling about how you saw Mitch, because, you know, send me a tweet. Send me how you feel about what reps actually mean, Mark. You know how important that full speed reality is. He just broke it down. It's so much different than the ACC and in college. How concerned are you? Well, two things, and then we'll get to the bar fly questions that they're probably throwing out there. I want to stay on Mitch, though, because I think it's very important, because it's concerning to me, because nervousness to me and skittish, if I could steal your word, which I love, by the way, in the pocket, that might ultimately be worse than almost any kind of negative you could throw, except an interception. Because if you're nervous and you're skittish and you're worried, then you're thinking way too much about what's around you and not about winning and delivering and doing what is necessary. Are you concerned about him bailing on these plays? And in his quote afterwards, and I'm going to paraphrase this, Mark, he talked about, well, we thought they were going to give us a lot of man, and they gave us a lot of zone. So, you know, we were kind of surprised by that. To me, I'm looking so cross-eyed at that and wondering, how do you not have a check or some sort of video on the sideline to change up your concepts because of what the Packers were doing? To me, was that a clue into how much this kid doesn't know his play, the playbook in Chicago right now?
Yeah, I mean, Phil, that's a weird sort of response
to
what we saw last night, because, you know, the bulk of plays, regardless of offensive system, regardless of, you know, Coryell downfield passing game or a more West Coast offense like these guys are going to be running, they have built into every single play options for man versus zone.
Exactly.
So whatever you're throwing out there, if you're throwing, you know, a simple slant flat concept, which is a West Coast type staple, you've got reads and you've got decisions and you've got progressions that you make, whether it's man or zone coverage. And if, you know, that was confusing to him, I do find that a little bit curious. I mean, I think he also admitted that, look, he had happy feet at times. And I think that the fact that he's cognizant of it doesn't make me, you know, paranoid or, you know, petrified about him figuring this out. There was that 3rd and 6, 3rd and 7, 3rd and 8 throw that he had when it was 20-17, when he was flushed to his right. He did get pressured. He didn't drop his eyes on that play. He kept him downfield. He found Miller working back towards him on a comeback route to move the sticks on that 3rd down. I thought that was a good play from him that, you know, gave me the confidence, okay, at least when he actually did get flushed, he didn't drop his eyes. And so there's at least that, if you're going to take a positive from it. And so I'm not ready to sort of like full on panic about it, but I do think that, you know, it does come from a level of familiarity and confidence and comfort level in the pocket. Once it, you know, it is sometimes a hard thing to learn that you can step up, that you don't have to drop your eyes. You don't have to escape out the side door every single time when you either feel pressure or don't, you know, that you can trust the guys around you.
Mm-hmm.
That's a tough thing to learn for some younger quarterbacks. It does take some time. It does take some reps.
But Mark, I didn't see this from him last season. I really, truly. Now, I don't know if it was just completely because of he had to or knew the playbook. But, you know, against the Packers, we've kind of seen this skittishness from our quarterbacks in these primetime matchups and big games. We've seen that. So was it nerves? You know, in your eyes and assessment, I trust more so than most, you know, what did, you know, is this what this kid is, or do you see him pulling it together?
I would lean right now that this was more a function of the moment, and this is not an overall trend that we're going to see mimicked all the time. And the reason that I'm going to make the way I'm going to lean on it is because I saw in there a quarterback in that moment, and a lot of these plays that a quarterback that was playing not to lose in that moment, that it was playing not to throw the game away. And he was more comfortable relying on his legs than he was in staying in the pocket and making some throws. And I think that's more a product of the environment, the moment, the rivalry, the Sunday night opener, and all that stuff. I don't think it's who he is as a quarterback. Because if you go back to a lot of the times when he was making throws, when he was at UNC, when he was playing bowl games or whatever it was, you know, he would get pressured, he would get flushed, he wouldn't drop his eyes. He was much more comfortable working those scramble drill situations. He wouldn't see ghosts in the pocket. I don't think this is who he is as a quarterback. I think it's more a function of the moment than anything.
One more thing, BG, and then let's go to the questions. I got a text from my dad, who's listening in Charleston, Rhode Island.
Hi, Dad.
Hi, Dad.
He wanted to just interject, and obviously he's impressed by Mark, but he wanted to interject a point, and I would fail if I didn't put this on our show. The coach was aggressive enough to go for it on 4th and 3 or 4 from the Packer 47 or 46 yard line or 38. But when the game was on the line, my father's saying, and you wanted to be and control it, he decides to kick the field goal and not run twice. So it's a great point, Mark, if you think about it, because that is true. In the beginning, you were, let's go for it and continue and try to put more points and be this team. And then all of a sudden, when you had a chance, despite all the adversity, you decide, nope, we're going to get cute, like you said, and then we're going to miss, and then we're going to kick a field goal. Instead of being that chess player, that Belichick, that championship type of coach, you weren't two moves ahead. You weren't saying, wait, the clock here, we got to run. Let's let it run down and then decide we're going to go for it or we're going to kick the field goal. But to your point, it's a great point one I missed, but it truly shows, wait a second here, we're not consistent.
Yeah, and no, that was a 4th and 4 at the Green Bay 37. And, you know, that's kind of, you know, one of those, you know, no man's land situations. It's going to be a long field goal. If you miss it, you give them great field goal position. You're not going to really punt it there. You know, you might have it be a touchback and you've gained, what, 17 yards? And so it's an aggressive decision, but probably the right one. But to your dad's point, it's a very good one. If you were aggressive then, you know, be who you are. Let's remember last year's Super Bowl, right? Mm-hmm. Philadelphia Eagles, they were aggressive all year long. They went for it on 4th downs. What did they do on 4th down of the Super Bowl against Bill Belichick? They didn't outthink. They didn't get away from who they were. They went for it on 4th down. They went with Philly special on 4th down. They go for it later on 4th down because they weren't going to be – and remember, Doug Peterson said that he was watching, you know, some of the AFC Championship game. He saw how conservative that Jacksonville got in the second half of that game. They had a chance. They had New England on the ropes, but they outthought themselves. They got too conservative, and Peterson swore that he was not going to do that. Stay who you are. If you're going to be aggressive all the time. If you're going to be aggressive enough to dial up that 3rd and 1 cute pass and play, then be aggressive again on 4th down and run it up the middle, but go for it. Win the game. Don't let the other team beat you.
Wow. I'm sure the bar flies are fired up tonight, BG. Mark is bringing it.
Mark is absolutely bringing it. In the chat room, it's all about Trubisky. And so were some of the questions that came in to ask BHL. So I'm going to stay with Mitch, and then we can move on to people's questions about Fangio and Nagy. So Chris at Bear Fan for Life, and you probably already answered this a couple times, but his question was, the playbook seemed severely condensed last night. Was that to keep less off of Mitch's plate? And if so, what does that say about his ability to learn a complicated playbook?
You know, I do think that in a sense it probably was condensed to keep, you know, not to put so much on his plate early in the season, especially in a situation like this where you're going into Lambeau Field on opening night, Sunday night. You want to just simplify it and give him the stuff that he's most familiar with and most ready to run. I don't think it's a concern going too far forward. You look at what he was running at UNC, more of an air raid type offense under Fedora. Fedora's offense is, they have some complexities to them. They have some route adjustments and route conversions to them. So I'm not too worried right now that there's going to be this sort of mental problem where he can't learn a big playbook. You know, it's the first year in this system. There's going to be a learning curve. And I think it might take, whether it's 2 games, 4 games, for them to truly get the full playbook together, then that's the amount of time that it takes. And you just kind of got to, hope that they could get the full playbook installed. And, maybe this is the full playbook. That could be, that might be a situation going forward where we look down, 2 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks down the road, we're like, wait, so this is pretty simplified. This isn't the big kind of offensive-minded, head coach with a big playbook that we were expecting. Hopefully it's not that situation. Hopefully they are just bringing it along slowly.
Our next question comes from Badge at Ryan Badgley 40. He wants to know why no commitment to the running game. And so do several of our barflies in the chat room.
I'll let you take this because I'm antsy enough as it is.
I'm concerned, Mark, because you brought up a point that reflects with me. I concern myself with that Andy Reid type of philosophy. Sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes Reid would lose the idea of the importance of the run game. And I can't, for the life of me, understand. Like, I went to bed, I think at like 3:30 in the morning, just staring at the ceiling, wondering why you didn't run Jordan Howard more and why you didn't go for it. Just so many plays transpired that had to do with setting the tone. I mean, you make a sauce, an Italian sauce, you start with olive oil and garlic. You start that, you get it hot, and you start, and then you're going to add the onions. The most important thing, Mark, in the sauce is the olive oil.
Yep.
You got to get it in the garlic. You got to get that. That's the running game.
And you got to let it sit for a while so that garlic infuses the oil.
Exactly.
You don't just like start it up. You got to take your time with it. And
exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why they got away from the ground game. Maybe it is that sort of Reid type influence. You're looking at, between Cohen and Howard, both of those guys were averaging, Howard averaged 5.5 yards
and 5.5.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what if everybody at Lambeau Field, so what if everybody in the world thought you were going to run the ball on 3rd and 1? Sometimes everybody thinks that because it's the smart thing to do. And all you're doing by being too cute is outthinking yourself. Run it, sneak it. I mean, not to make the Patriots-Belichick comparison again, but how many times have we seen in that situation Brady just get them to the line?
Hurry up,
get them to the line, get everybody wondering what's going on, and he just sneaks it for a yard. It's 1 yard. I mean, yeah, I don't know why they got away from the run game. I don't know why, especially in that situation, they got away from the run game. I have my, issues with how they executed the play they ended up calling, but the decision to not run it there just did not make sense to me.
So Badge has another question for us. He wants to know, and this is the next expletive that I'm not going to share, why bleep Mike Burton was on the field on the last defensive snap when you're facing 4th and 10? Sorry for cursing.
The whole factor, I don't even know if Mark knows Mike Burton, for God's sake. No one should know him because I don't know how he's on the roster to begin with. There's a play, Badge, early in the game at an eye. He whiffs on a freaking backer. He whiffs. And then he scurries and hustles to reattach himself and push. He's the worst fullback I've ever seen anybody. He made a catch. I compared it to a kid robbing donuts with cops running. He was the worst. I've just never seen this guy make a NFL fullback block, Mark. So for him to be out there as a catch blocker, I don't know what you know about Mike Burton. Obviously, you're watching tape, so the Mike Burton Chronicles, me and Danny Shimon are going to take him on and show one play of Mike Burton a week, because I'm not making this up. It's that bad, Mark.
Yeah, I mean, Look, I take notes by hand because I'm old school, right? It's pen and paper. Mm-hmm. Using my notes. I'm waving them to the camera so everybody can see them. And I have 4th and 10, 2 running back look, fullback in the game to block. Why? I mean,
not
like,
corrected,
I don't
folks,
understand
not
it. I don't understand it. Like, if you were going to have him in there because you trusted him that much in pass protection, then why is it happening now? Why hasn't this been done throughout the rest of the game? So it just, that didn't make sense to me at all. Like, if you trust the guy so much in pass protection to have him there on 4th and 10 and gotta have type play at the end of the game, then why is this the first we're seeing of it? And so clearly something's off here. And that didn't make sense to me at all. It didn't make sense to me in the moment. It doesn't make sense to me now when I'm being reminded of it and I'm getting angry all again. Just
Mike Burton has made a lot of tempers flare.
My cardiologist is going to be so angry with me. He's going to be like, why is your blood pressure racing again? Well, I was angry because the Bears have this fullback that doesn't belong on the field, and he's just going to laugh me out of his office.
Hair Bear in our chat room says, I watched Mike Burton in the game and laughed every time he whiffed. I couldn't get the doc's voice out of my head. I am scarred for life.
I think we all are.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I've got to learn how to use Burton appropriately because people seem to think I'm talking about Trey Burton every time I tweet, and it's like, no, people.
Yeah.
Not even close.
I've had to make sure I got to type out the first name because one of the bar flies is like, well, I don't know. I think he blocked good for Philly. I'm talking about Mike Burton, the fullback or the fraud back, whatever we're going to call him.
Or Trey Burton. All right, let's switch gears and talk about the defense because the rest of our questions were all about that. RC Me at Royalville came up with this question. Whose call do you think it was to go conservative on the defense, Nagy or Fangio?
I would trust that, you know, the head coach and offensive-minded guy was going to let his defensive coordinator handle all that stuff. I would have been surprised if Nagy's like, no, you've also got to get conservative. I would imagine he would leave him to his own devices. Again, when you see that, you know, they blitz him twice and he throws for 126 yards and a game-winning touchdown, you do wonder, like, what, you know, are you going to blitz him more? But that being said, like we talked about earlier, you got a guy that's gimpy back there. You got a guy that can't move. Maybe coming into this game, your game plan was, we don't want to blitz this guy too much because he can make you pay in those situations. He's mobile enough to, you know, elude sacks in the pocket and extend plays. You get Rodgers in those scramble throw situations, he can be so dangerous. That calculus goes out the window when he gets hurt. That calculus goes out the window when he can't move back there. Then you got to go after him, whether it's you bring in Roquan Smith to do it or you do it some other way. You got to get after him because he's not comfortable back there. And by not pressuring him, you're making him comfortable back there. You're letting him be comfortable back there. It's just not the way to approach it, I think.
Yeah, I agree with Mark. I think Vic was given the free rein. I think Vic got a little conservative. I know the numbers say something, but when I watch the tape and I see, okay, a 3-man rush and then a delay blitz and people are getting beat, sometimes Mark's stats will say things and it's just not, let's get 4 guys after this guy. Let's bring a 5th. Let's get up and press them and have them try to beat us. You know, one thing about great quarterbacks, they hate when their timing is off.
Right.
So if you can get home, which you're talking about, you got this kid, number 58, Mark. You got 38. These guys were flying out there. Adrian Amos was setting a tone. You're talking about Mack destroying the tackles, and you have this momentum on your side defensively, then you're sitting back and allowing these huge off coverage, simple hitch that Adams turns into a touchdown off. I don't know if Amukamara was injured and then tried to come out and play again. I know he was grabbing his hamstring or his calf, apparently, and then he came back in the game, and then I don't know if he's trying to be a warrior and then really ended up hurting the Bears, but his play was awful in the second half. And then, you know, Fuller drop. I mean, the difference between winning and losing, Mark. catching and dropping the football right there. That could have put the game away. You got to catch that. As much as, you know, there's so much to go around, and you just, in that situation, the cream rises to the top. You paid this kid to stay here. I've been a huge fan of him. He was in position. I thought he got pushed off on the first touchdown. Guy clearly armbarred and shoved him and then got the separation. And they score a touchdown, and then you could feel all the momentum change. The whole tide. Oh, here we go. It should have been called, Mark, that other one. And then, you know, the dropped interception, he could have just redeemed everybody, and he drops it. So the conservativeness to me in the way they played coverage, I will agree. I thought they should have just been going all out press and make this guy beat you with the biggest play and be the perfect guy on a hurt leg. I know the numbers might say something else, but I'm looking at off coverage and blitzes and making this shit so easy for this guy. And it just wasn't right to me.
You're answering Chris Armstrong's question. She had a couple of them because she's pretty annoyed. Why was the Bears secondary so putrid last night? Was it just Rodgers? Why were they not pressing the receivers? Why didn't they change coverage when Green Bay went to three-step quick slants?
Those are all fantastic questions, and you know, if I knew the answer to those, then I'd, you know, probably be a little bit, you know, richer man. But I'm not, so I don't know the answers to those. So, I mean, those are all great questions. Mukumara looked bad on that touchdown that he gave up. I don't know if he was hurt or what, like Phil, you were just saying there, but they just didn't seem to either want to try something different or change it up or what. And again, maybe this all goes back to even on the defensive side of the ball. These guys needed more reps. Who knows? But they just seemed to be set in their ways with what they were doing on both sides of the ball. And sometimes you've got to change it up. You've got to have plan Bs, plan Cs, plan Ds for things. And it didn't seem like they had them on either side of the football.
Mark, seriously, talk about this. You're a quarterback. You know, I played quarterback a little bit, and not like you on the college level. I moved to receiver because I was 5'7". So I look at what Chris is asking, and you have a gimpy quarterback whose main asset and attribute, quick release and accuracy, his best maneuvers to get out of the pocket and throw deep accurately. Guy's great. I'm not going to take anything away from him. I can't stand him. I honestly wonder if it was a little bit of Hollywood that his injury wasn't as bad. And he made, just knowing the guy, I would not put it past him. But that being said, how do you take away these quick games, Mark? What frustrated you when the defense lined up and did what?
Well, I mean, let's think back to when Rodgers and that offense struggled a little bit a couple of seasons ago when Nelson was coming back from his injury. You saw guys that couldn't get separation against press coverage, against tight man coverage, and Rodgers was then asked to make the perfect throw on each slant flat combination. Again, if you come into a game against the Packers or you don't have something dialed up to cover slant flat, you're not doing your job because that's their bread and butter. And, you know, that's the type of stuff that frustrated them years ago. That's the kind of stuff that frustrated me. You're trying to go quick game when you've got that press coverage, guys in the face of the receivers, they can't get quick separation off the line of scrimmage. It makes those throws tougher because you're asked then as a quarterback to make the perfect throw. And if you're gimpy and you can't do it, or if you were just god awful at playing the position like I was, it's going to make it hard. That's what you do. That's how you take those route concepts away. That's the answer that you're going to have for them. Now, I understand maybe you're worried about getting beaten deep. Maybe you're worried about giving up big plays, but this is their bread and butter. That's what Mike McCarthy likes to run. Have an answer for it. Have a response ready for it. Do the things that frustrate those route concepts.
I know I used you there, Mark, but I wanted to prove the point to Chris. You're asking maybe a rhetorical. The point was, we don't know why, especially with the injury. I have it written down in my notes. Can't believe you're not press man now all game to close this out. Can't believe. Let him beat you
having to wait that split second, and guess what? You got the maybe the best pass rusher in football on your team. And guess what a split second does to the pass rush? It gets home. So, Chris, they messed up. This was a coaching loss in my book. It'll go down as that, as bad as Mitch looked at times, and the dropped interception and everything. I keep it 100. I'm not afraid of anything or anybody on tape. It never lies. I always go to the tape. I can't wait to get the coach's film so I could see everything that's out there. But the breakdown of that, Mark, I appreciate, because it really was baffling, especially when he's injured, because it was all about the quick game to get rid of that pass rush.
Yeah, exactly right.
Couple last questions before we close out this show. Barelissimo1 wanted to know. He says, two of the biggest Packer plays came from DBs playing under the ball instead of over the top. When do players stopping aggressive and start playing smart?
Well, I mean, I think you're talking about the Mukamara play over the top where he's not looking at the ball. Had he looked at the ball, to Barelissimo's point, he might have had an opportunity to either swat it away or intercept it. He just didn't do it. And, you know, it's about being comfortable and not nervous. You know, we talk about Mitch Trubisky looking a little iffy in the pocket. Sketchy. What was the term? I already lost it.
Skittish.
Skittish. Those corners started to feel what everybody was tweeting out there, that, uh-oh, you know, this is where it's going to happen. And old momentum in no other sport. You know, basketball, I could say, yeah, I could see momentum. But football turns the tides of with momentum, Mark, like no other. And I felt like the secondary was thinking too much and not playing with that same swagger that you expected out of them.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And momentum, we saw last night, we see it in our games all the time. It can be a real thing.
So the chat room wants to talk about the other Burton. They want to know, where was Trey Burton and what happened to him?
Well, he's wide open in the end zone on one play, waving his hands. Mitch, Mark, did you see that play?
Yeah, I mean, I saw that play too. Yeah, I mean, that's another example of Trubisky either seeing or not seeing things that are there or aren't there to be seen. I mean, you know, he saw some things that weren't there. He didn't see some things that were there. And that might be his night in a nutshell. They did a lot with Burton with YISO, where they put him on up by himself in the 3-by-1, and they did a lot of stuff to the bunch. You know, they did a lot of stuff with Burton on the left side of the formation. What's interesting, if you look at Trubisky's next-gen passing chart from last night, a lot of throws to the right, not a ton to the left.
Yeah.
It's something curious to see with him. He loves throwing to the right, and if you're going to put Burton on the left side as an isolated YISO player, he might not look there all the time, and so that's something to watch with him going forward, too.
That's a huge point. It's something that I honestly wanted to ask you, when you look at this, does it concern you that he doesn't look left? Last night was the first time I really noticed it, Mark, that Mitch, his tendency was just to draw himself to the right. And then the East-West game, you know, you see so much of the quick screen, even when the formation of the defensive formation didn't allow the play to happen. They didn't check out of it. They just ran the play, and it just was a wasted play. To me, the too much of the flanker screen, the bubble screens that they were running, just didn't work. Did you feel the same? It was too much East-West attack.
Yeah, I mean, this is an offense that does seem like it's going to have a very much East-West, you know, short passing game, cross and route type of flavor to it. And, you know, if that works, great. If it doesn't, you'd like to think that they have an answer for it. They have a plan B. That seems to be another growing theme of this conversation, the lack of a plan B. Maybe they just didn't have it. Maybe they didn't have enough of that stuff in the playbook, and they need to get more stuff like that in the playbook. But
well,
this is their offense. This is that sort of Andy Reid, Matt Nagy type of West Coast offense. We've seen Reid get more vertical in seasons past and into this season. Maybe they're still working that stuff in the playbook. Maybe it's going to be something that they're going to have for other game plans and just not this one. Maybe it's something we're going to see this week with Seattle, you know, a team that's probably more cover three type based. You can do some stuff up the seams. So maybe it's just something that they didn't have in the install for this game, but we're going to see it as the season progresses.
All right, gentlemen, two questions coming out of the chat room. Gaines Report wants to know, Mark, do you think we should be concerned about Prince Mukamara in coverage going forward?
Yeah, and I'm not saying that just as a guy that's somewhat a Nebraska fan by adoption and family. I think we saw some struggles there last night, and as Phil said, maybe there's an injury situation, but you know, there was a tendency there to keep some stuff in front of him and then try to flow to the football, and he wasn't moving well. It seems like the hips were stiff. You know, there was an inability to change direction at times, which is if you're a receiver trying to come downhill and make a tackle, I mean, your defensive back, excuse me, trying to come downhill and make a tackle, and you can't because the hips are stiff and you can't move and change direction. That's going to be a problem for you. So I don't know if there's an injury there or not, but I would definitely be a little bit wary about it right now, you know, given what we saw last night.
Mark, I got to ask you a question that I wrote down this today. During my depressed day at work, I wanted to ask you, you know, I had Deshaun Watson as my number one quarterback coming out. I had Patrick Mahomes number two, and it was really close with Trubisky and Kaiser. I look at the skittishness, and have you obviously got to see a close look at Deshaun Watson. I don't know how much of Mahomes you got to see, but I know you had to watch Watson because the Patriots were playing him. Do you ever see the skittishness in that kid?
In Mahomes or in Watson or in both? Because I think you saw with Watson yesterday a little bit of it. I think the Patriots did a pretty decent job with rush lane integrity, and there were times when he wanted to run. He felt that internal clock in his head start to chime midnight, and he had to do something with it. And his looks within those moments were to run first rather than to keep plays alive. You know, that's one of the ways that Watson thrives, is when he can get outside of those scramble drill situations. So you saw a little bit of that with Watson yesterday, and some of that might be health related. I mean, you know, he's coming back from the knee injury. You know, on that Hail Mary to end the game, you know, he sort of seemed to be stretching his right leg a little bit. I don't know if he got hurt or dinged up in that game as well. So that might have been part of the reason for it. You know, watching Mahomes from yesterday's game against the Chargers, I didn't see any of it from him. I mean, there was a guy that looked completely calm, confident, comfortable, confident in his reads, comfortable in the pocket. There were times when that pass rush, which I was wondering if they were going to get after him a little bit. Obviously, Bosa was hurt and he wasn't playing, but you know, he handled it both from you know, an athletic standpoint with moving around. The things he can do with his quick release, that crossing route touchdown to Tyreek Hill, he had a defensive lineman in his face from the snap, basically. But the quick release, he drops the arm angle, doesn't panic, doesn't get phased by it, gets the ball out of his hand. With his quick release and his arm talent, the ball just gets there in a hurry. And then when you add Tyreek Hill on the other, on the receiving end of it, it's just a fast play from snap to finish. And so I thought Mahomes looked completely comfortable in the pocket yesterday, much better than I thought he was going to look against that Chargers defense.
I just wanted Mark to break that down.
Of the night is gonna...
I'm sorry, BG. I just wanted to make sure the audience knew. I wanted. Well, no one's rushing, and Mark clearly said this before. So if you're a first time listener, Mark really breaks down quarterbacks tremendously. Not just because he's here, I'm saying this. I really believe it, and I don't read a lot of people's stuff, but I definitely go out of my way to read his analysis when it comes to the quarterback position, and that's a testament to you, Mark. So I wanted to see and get a read on it. I know there's no bust. Oh, Mitch is bust. But I was just, you know, this is set year two, and here you are, and that skittishness on the big day, and there's a lot of Bears fans nervous. Rightfully so.
Yeah, and, you know, to calm everybody a little bit, I'm going to use some wise words here from somebody that knew a lot more about quarterbacks than I ever will, and that's Bill Walsh. And Bill Walsh always said, look, when it comes to quarterbacks, they got to figure it out by year three. Like, that's when he wanted them to have it figured out. And, you know, that's, you know, year three. you hope to see what you want, what you were drafting, you know, when you made the decision to go get him, you know, moving up to go get him. You hope to see by year three the guy that you were hopeful that night when you picked him. And so, you know, obviously last night a tough loss all around. Obviously you see in Trubisky some things that are disconcerting in this moment. But Bill Walsh waited until year three, so I think it's important to give him that time. And I'm not saying, you know, year three in the system. I just say year three overall. He's going to have those sorts of things figured out. You know, if we're still having this conversation this time next year, well, then fantastic, because you guys like me enough to bring me back in, you know, another year, and that will be great. But if we're still having this conversation about Mitch Trubisky being skittish in the pocket this time next year, then I think people can really start to worry about it. And it might be signs of a deeper, deeper issue and one that he can't overcome. Now it's just something to watch and monitor going forward and not really panic about yet.
Next year, I'm going to bring you back in a few weeks, brother.
Of course, my man.
You know, I want to see some. I want to make sure the Schofield song comes back and is played again.
It's going to be my ringtone. So
I'm going to text it to you. You'll have to DM me yourself so I could text it to you so you can have it. Yeah, I'm a good guy.
You are, my friend.
There's trolls on Twitter that say otherwise. Go ahead, BG. I'm sorry.
Last question is going to continue off of your train of thought there, Mark. B. Diddy is in the chat room, and he wants to know if you think Mitch will be a top 10 quarterback one day.
I think he has the talent and the athleticism and the ability to adjust arm angles at times that he can be. Now, it's a matter of making that happen. And I think Chicago has at least started the process of putting the people from a coaching standpoint on down around him to get him there. So I think you add in the offensive-minded head coach. You add in, you know, an offensive coordinator who's familiar with some of the schemes and the spread-type stuff and the air raid type stuff that he was running in college. You're giving him that foundation to work with. You're starting to get some guys in, you know, a security blanket in Trey Burton, that tight end type that, you know, you could look to on a 3rd and 7, even though he didn't do too much of that Sunday night. But you can look to in that moment, you know, you can trust that he's going to be open and win in a contested catch situation. You've got some pieces, whether it's Cohen and Howard in the run game, that can do some mismatch type stuff for you. So I think they've started the process of putting that group around him where he can become that top 10 type quarterback, but it's a matter of him now taking the next steps over the next year or two to get there. He has the talent to do it. There's a reason he went 2nd overall in the draft. There's a reason people were hyping him as QB1 in that class. Now it's just a matter of him doing the work himself to get him to that level. He's got the talent to do it. It's just a matter of him actually making that goal happen.
All right, fellas, it is 1 hour and 30 minutes of Bears Hour Live. By the time we wrap this up, I'm going to share with you some of the things that the Barflies have been saying all night long. Gaines Report says, my advice, never take the foot off the gas. Steve Zim Zimmerman says, I was ready to throw away all of my bear shit last night. I calmed down, but not by much. Bill Baggins says, if I was drinking last night, there is zero chance that my TV makes it through the game. Ace Daniels says, Coach and Trubisky lost the game for us. That defense did all it could. A team is like an engine. Everyone is part of that engine. A part breaks, the engine does not run properly. Phil has got me inspired, man. Greg Breggs Jr. is in the house. And he says, that is what makes this most frustrating about this loss. They literally could have won this game 25 different ways in the second half. They pissed all of them away. And Ben Alexander is in the house, and he says, second half was like the Dolphins in 85. Quick passes versus the blitz, and no plan B set the defense scrambling.
Oh, yeah. That's the Schofield plan B. Yeah. To Greg Bragg's point, Mark, I've watched a lot of Bears football, obviously. I don't think I've missed a snap. Even at a wedding, the vows were being placed, and I had the phone in my lap. My wife's shaking her head like, I can't believe you're doing this. I had the Bluetooth in my ear. My boy, I'm like, how the heck are you getting married? Oh, his Jamaican wife's family wants it on a Sunday at
It was the Pittsburgh Steelers Bears overtime game last year. So I'm going nuts in my seat, like, oh my God, please. And they're taking the bow. But I've never, ever, even the NFC Championship game, have seen, to Greg Braggs' point, a team find every which way to lose a football game on a national stage like I did last night. There's just, I love Greg, and it resonated with me. I said the same thing to coaching, to drops, to every which way. I've never seen anything like it. It was the most disappointing loss in my time watching the Bears because, and I'm going to speak on this tomorrow, but I want to say this, because of how impressive the defense and Mitch looked in the first half, and to have that lead and then blow it against your rival, it was just so disappointing.
Yeah, I mean, if you change one play, you know, that's a game that they win. I mean, they, you know, Trubisky takes the shot to Cohen on that 31 play and you hit it, or Fuller makes that interception, or change any other one play and this is a game that goes the other way.
Amazing. That's why I love this game and I hate it. It's a love-hate relationship.
All right, Phil, let's remind our Barflies and all of our new listeners, because there were several of you in the chat room tonight, that the next new episode of Bears 100 Proof will hit your podcast stream and the website on Wednesday morning. Scheduled to join us are Peter Bukowski, who covers the enemy for LockedOnPackers.com, and Brett Maley, Las Vegas-based Barfly writer for BearsBarroom.com, and art expert for Pawn Stars. Also live on Wednesday night, right back here on MixLR, is Buffone 55, the fastest moving 30-minute sports podcast on the internet. We also have a new fantasy football goon, and of course, we're back here again on Friday for the Mike North Advantage. If you head over to BearsBarroom.com while you're waiting for those podcasts, you will find new posts written by Steven Zim Zimmerman, who has been in the chat room tonight. Also posted are articles from Brandon Vosky, Matt Karsten, and Chris Armstrong. Our writers are fired up. Our swag shop is buzzing, and we want to thank all the Barflies who've shopped and received their orders and are now sharing their swag photos on social media. Everyone at Bears Barroom truly appreciates all of your support of us and everything we do to bring you the best Bears content out there. Phil, you as always get the final word.
Well, it was a devastating loss, a defeat against a rival. Concerns about Trubisky were risen and raised. And Mark, I totally appreciate you coming on this show and breaking it down with me. I think Mark has a brewing fan base of Barflies and Chicago Bears fans because of your sense of humor as well as your ability to analyze this great game of football. And I'm so glad to have you on my show with me to break it down and really put a microscope on Mitch Trubisky this year and have you come back. I'll get the brews out and the song will be played, and I just really appreciate you coming on, and really we got to see what they do and how this kid grows next week. You know, it's going to be interesting because it's back-to-back primetime showcases and the Bears really have to get, and this is a winnable game. Let's face it. This isn't the same Seattle team you're used to, but every game brings its challenges. So I just want to see Mitchell come out and be a different football player than we saw last night.
Mark, any final thoughts?
Well, just again, it was just a blast to be here. I just, with Trubisky, remember, development is not linear. And there will be bumps, there will be highs and lows and peaks and valleys and things like that. I think what we saw at the start of that game was what Mitchell Trubisky and this offense can be. And if there's any sort of positive takeaway from that, it's that. It's when he's comfortable with what's being called, when he's comfortable with what he's seeing with his eyes, when he's trusting himself. That's who Mitchell Trubisky can be as a quarterback. That's what this offense can look like. And when you factor in this defense and how special that defense can be, I think this team still has some great days ahead of it. And, you know, to bring back to the Belichick stuff for one more minute, Belichick always looks at the season in sort of four-game increments. He doesn't care what you look like in week one. What do you look like in week four? What do you look like in week eight? You want to be playing your best football in weeks 12 and week 16 of the season. We're not there yet. You know, we got a long way to go. This team's going to be a lot different, and hopefully it's going to be the team that we saw in the first half of this game if you're a Bears fan and not the second half of this game. Let's hope that's the team we see in weeks 12 and week 16. It has the potential to be that team once we get there.
Mark Schofield. Look at him, bringing it.
I had to match your intensity in the first round, man. I had to do it.
I loved it, bro. That's why I had to say your full name.
There you go.
Did you like how I got the attorney lyric in there?
That was incredible from start to finish. I'm telling you, I will give you my phone. I'll give you my cell number. I want it to be my ringtone. I'm going to make it my alarm, so it's the first thing I hear in the morning.
I just want to know what the Mrs. Schofield thinks of this next week. I want you to text me. Play her the song.
I will.
He wrote a song about me. I can see you already.
It's going to be something. It's going to be magical.
All right. Mark is getting rave reviews in the chat room, and everyone wants you to come back real soon. That wraps up this edition of Bears Hour Live. We will see you all next week on Tuesday, given the Bears play the Seahawks on Monday night. Bye.